It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the new iPhone. Find out why it's about the size of a Pop-Tart. We'll also take a look at some of the new rumors about Apple TV, the iWatch, and what's ahead for Google I.O. There's some Apple goodness in there, too. It's all coming up next on Mac Break Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 408, recorded June 24th, 2014. 1.5 Pop-Tarts. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out what your used iPhone, iPad, or other Apple product is worth at gazelle.com. And by LegalZoom. Visit LegalZoom.com to save on your legal needs and gain access to a network of legal plan attorneys for guidance. LegalZoom's not a law firm. It provides self-help services at your specific direction. Visit LegalZoom.com and use the offer code MBW to receive $10 off at checkout. And by Offset.com, a brand new brand from Shutterstock. Offset provides a collection of high-end, royalty-free photography and illustration from award-winning talent. To receive a buy one, get one free image on new accounts, go to Offset.com/welcome/MacBreak. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show where we cover all the Apple news. And ladies and gentlemen, I give you in the left corner, weighing in at 145 pounds, Jason Mocksnell.
You're off by about 50 pounds there. But hi, Leo. It's very kind of you to say that.
Executive editor of IDG, creator of the Incomparables, master of the tech hive.
Good to have you. Beekeeper.
Beekeeper. Are you a beekeeper?
No, I'm not.
Oh, okay.
But the tech hive.
The tech hive. I get it. Bzzz.
Yeah.
Got it. Also here, ladies and gentlemen, from iMore.com, from Canada, Montreal, Renee Richie Rich Richie.
Joyeux Fête Nationale, Leo. Happy Quebec Day.
Is it Quebec Day?
It is. It's Saint Jean Baptiste Day, which is Quebec Day. It's a Fête Nationale.
Do you... got his head chopped off. Salome delivered
He's
a platter.
He's a patron saint of Quebec, so they made today the national day.
I get it. Okay. I'm just trying to think.
So it's a public holiday.
Public holiday from Canada. Yeah. And here from New England and the Chicago Sun-Times, the master of the celestial waste of bandwidth, Andy, I have no idea, Inotko.
You have to choose your catchphrase very carefully because it's something that you feel as though you can be saying for the rest of your life.
I don't. I think Inotko is a hard one. I Mock Chanel, easy. Richie, mm-hmm. Richie. But I don't know what to do with it.
And he's getting angry.
No, I don't know.
I have no idea how to spell it.
Ron Palillo had to be happy saying, oh, Mr. Cutter, for the rest of his life. I'm quite comfortable saying, I don't know.
So Apple had the first word in the month of June with WWDC. Google about to have the last word with Google I.O., interesting article in Quartz. Tim Cook is setting Apple up for its next big hit, Dan Frommer writing, but he isn't getting the credit he deserves. And I think this is kind of an interesting analysis of WWDC and what we are all doing, which is waiting for iSomething.
I don't know. I mean, Jason had a great article on Tim Cook before WWDC.
Same thing.
A lot of people thank you, Renee.
Same thing. You said the same thing.
It's just that it depends who you're reading. If all you're reading is mainstream publications, then you're getting an incredibly distorted view of Apple, in my opinion at least. But if you're reading people who cover Apple, who've been covering
day
it for
in,
years,
day
I think
out.
You're getting a good view. Yeah.
And the view being Tim Cook is preparing us for the future.
Well, we don't know. I mean, we don't know all the details, I think, as part of this. We are trying to tell the whole story when the whole story hasn't
exactly.
been told.
My point last week was, we haven't seen it yet.
Right.
Let's see it.
But I am encouraged by the fact that Apple
yes.
is trying to do things differently, and the things they do may not end up being successful or not, but I think if they were not visibly trying to do things differently, if they were visibly trying to just sort of like well, let's not rock the boat. Let's keep it as much static from Steve Jobs' era as possible. I think that would be like 100% guaranteed failure. And there's some people who don't believe that.
And you could, we can say demonstrably that's not what they're doing.
No, and after WWDC, it is even clearer that they were not. I mean, the Beats acquisition is a good example of something I think that wouldn't, that's a new part of the playbook. But I think the developer-centric announcements at the developer conference were the thing that made it clear this is a different Apple. And some of my PR interactions with them are very different. Some of their product rollouts have been very different in the last couple of years. They are doing new things, which they haven't done for a while.
Yeah, I think they've come out of the desert a little bit over the past year. Definitely, the big highlight of WWDC was a return for me to the perception of Apple as a company that makes one product, and that one product is all Apple products, and they all work together really, really nicely. It really did seem as though a lot of these product lines and a lot of these services were starting to drift apart a little bit, where it wasn't quite so emphatic that, hey, if you've got an iPhone, oh man, you're really going to want to use iCloud, or wow, if you use a MacBook, you're going to want an Apple TV, because wait till you see how these two things can work together. And it became things hadn't gone completely south, but you really had a lot more options, because there seemed to be a lot of trade-offs of going with all Apple than others. And now it seems as though everybody's talking together. Everybody's figuring out a way to make all their products work together better. And even if that weren't the case, if all the new Apple did was keep the power on, keep the water on, speaking from personal experience, the local utility company has done a lot of upgrades to my neighborhood over the past 5 or 6 years, whereas I could expect one major power outage a year that would last more than one day. Now it's been 2 years. We're hopeful. And just because you don't have like hovercraft in the garage, the fact that all the services that they've been delivering all along are the same services, but they're just working a lot better now, a lot more reliably, and bring a lot more power, that is in itself something that would be worthy of praise. So we're all happy.
I think 2 years ago, Tim Cook reorganized Apple in a very fundamental way, and we're seeing the payoff for that. And it's in a lot of ways. It's in all the way the products work together, but it's also in that Apple now can manufacture at scale. And I think Ben Behrens said this really well. They can do it nimbly and with agility. And it really is a whole new Apple as a product, not just as a company.
Yeah, the continuity features that are coming out in Yosemite and iOS 8 are a thing that would not have happened in Apple 2 years ago, because it involves the Mac and iOS really working together seamlessly, and somebody conceiving of that from the beginning. And that wouldn't have happened with the two divisions split up like they were 2 years ago.
Talk about continuity versus handoff, because I'm a little confused.
I am too. Continuity seems to be a kind of a nebulous PR term to try and explain some of the stuff that happens, and some of it's iCloud and some of it's handoff.
It's an umbrella term.
Yeah. It's a very squishy umbrella term. Handoff is the feature where you're like on one device in proximity to another device, and that other device knows where you are and can take over where you left off. And that's not even just per app. I mean, one of the things that they talked about at the developer conference is it's per, it can be an app to a website. So you can be like on Facebook on your phone, walk up to your Mac and have that page open in your web browser on the Mac. That's the same place you were on the app. So it's pretty clever stuff. But that's handoff. And then continuity can covers some other stuff too, I think, like iCloud documents and things like that.
Yeah, well, continuity is AirDrop plus the new easy, what they call instant tethering, plus the ability to answer phone calls, SMS, and MMS on the iPad as well as on the Mac with handoff. So that's all under the continuity umbrella. The most interesting part of this, though, is exactly what Jason said before, is that there's a whole new organization behind it. It's not just that continuity was created, but previously, and I don't know how widely known this is, Apple was run, there was the iOS division and there was the OS X division. There were people at the top of that making sure features came out, people on top of OS X. Now there's people in charge of features. For example, there's someone in charge of continuity, and that's continuity on iOS and on OS X. And that's a fundamental difference that allows for features like this to exist.
Yeah, it's a huge change for them, and you're starting to see the rewards. Last year it happened too soon to see a lot last year. But this year, we're definitely seeing that Apple's philosophy is not to stick these two operating systems together, but to make them work really, really well together. And that benefits the Mac, because iOS is so popular that if the Mac can be a much better computer experience than a PC, if you use an iOS device, that potentially makes the Mac that much more valuable and people more likely to buy a Mac.
Although let's not forget that the majority of iOS devices are used by Windows users.
Exactly. But that this is an advancement that makes maybe the Mac a little more exciting for them. Mm-hmm. And certainly the idea is that the Apple products are better together than they are, you know,
is that the goal of this, to nudge people towards the Mac?
I think that's I don't know if it's the goal. I think it's a strong possible result of this. Just the idea that you can walk up to your Mac. I should say also, this is about iPads and iPhones working well together. It's not just to the Mac.
True. And it's for developers too, because even though it was harder in many instances, at least based on my read, Apple used this, they created these features the same on both devices. They could have taken shortcuts in iOS, shortcuts in OS X that would have resulted in lack of compatibility, but the way it's implemented on both is through tremendous effort is very similar.
As opposed to AirDrop in the current generations, which are the same feature with the same name and don't work and together.
Use totally different technologies.
Incompatible. Yeah. So the reason I bring this, go ahead.
And let's not forget about the relationship with developers over the past 2 or 3 weeks. Now that more developers have had exposure to their own contacts inside of Apple and their own exposure to the videos, even if they weren't at WWDC, a line that I'm hearing in various flavors is that it feels like Apple and I are both fighting in the same trench now. It doesn't feel as though... It doesn't feel as though they're going to frag us just to make a point to the competition of exactly how badass they are, which has been sort of a problem over it's historically been a little bit of a problem. iCloud burned a lot of people and left a lot of people gun shy. Now, I think most developers that I've been speaking to have been talking about the opportunities that iOS 8 is bringing to them, as opposed to the obligations and the burdens that iOS 7 were dropping on them.
Do you think that... the $650 that Microsoft is offering MacBook Air owners to trade it in for a Surface Pro 3, is this a response to continuity?
There was a joke on Tech News Today about the Surface to Air missile or the Air to Surface missile.
I like it.
Yeah.
Surface to Air to Surface.
I think it's more of a response to IT departments that might have closets full of MacBook Airs that they're supporting. And the idea that we got to get some Surface tablets into this department just to sort of start the infection going.
You need to have... What? Which Mac? It has to power on your MacBook Air. It has to be working condition. You may not trade in water damaged or cracked screens.
Well, then it's not worth it. It has all those restrictions.
It has to work. I'm trying to figure out which Airs.
Feisty Microsoft. It might be any MacBook Air. Feisty Microsoft. I like feisty Microsoft.
Feisty.
Leo, one thing I wanted to mention that we skipped over, but I think it's really important. And, you know, Gruber and Guy English mentioned this last week, and I'm sure Jason and Andy saw it, but Apple employees were so happy. They were palpably happy.
Yeah.
Interesting.
It's a huge change from some of the previous.
Yeah. I mean, there's so much mingling that happens before WWDC, and rarely were I hearing so many people saying, oh my God, this is going to be a big one. Because Apple, you know, they're sort of synonymous with bold statements, but they in the interactions that I've had with Apple, even Apple PR, rarely do they go for big banner sort of here's how we're going to advertise the new bold flavor Pringles. They usually don't say stuff like that. So that really put me on the edge of my seat. And damn if they didn't deliver. You're right. It does reflect maybe even a new optimism throughout the company that if the company wasn't foundering, and they weren't, you need to do better than to simply be doing okay and to be able to point to profits. I think now they are pointing to here are great things that we're working on over the next 1, 2, and 5 years. That's going to keep me at the company for the next 1, 2, and 5 years because I want to be around as these things get built.
I think it's in the last few years, the feeling that I've gotten from Apple is that it's an organization that knew it was doing really well and was really afraid of screwing it up. And I don't get that now. This is an organization that is confident. The people who work there are confident, and they are doing these new things, and they're doing it with confidence. This is definitely not coming from a place of fear, like they're panicking. And some people in the media have portrayed it that way. And I can tell you, it's not like that. It's not like that for the Apple developers, and it's not like that for the Apple employees. They are confident that they're making the right decisions here. And they might not all work out, but... that's a good place for Apple to be, is confidently making what it thinks are the right decisions in order to succeed. Yeah.
So since the WWDC, Amazon's announced a phone, direct competition for the iPhone, and maybe setting the table for the iPhone 6. And, of course, we're going to hear tomorrow from Google. What do you think Apple employees and the heads of the executives are thinking at this point?
The thing about the Amazon phone, for me at least, is it's only for Americans on AT&T who are hugely invested on Amazon Prime.
It's pretty limited, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, and that's nothing for. I mean, the Amazon experience is great on iOS. It's pretty good on Android. So maybe that famous Microsoft thing. Maybe a year from now, 2 years from now, it'll be interesting. You know, version 2, version 3. The thing I like most about Google I/O though is, as an Apple user, it's a great show for me because they make so many apps, so many services for iOS that it's like it's a second Christmas. I get to sit there and see all the awesome stuff they do with photography, what they're going to do with Gmail, what they're going to do with Google Now, because I can enjoy that as well. And it's one of the best things about using an iPhone. You know, you don't even get great Google services on the Amazon phone, but you get them on the iPhone. You get great Apple services, great Microsoft services. It's really, you know, we get a lot of choice.
Yeah. And the other great thing about Google is that they are a company that's not afraid to put out their best ideas while they're developing them. So Google I/O is often exciting because you're seeing something that the first company that's going to be investing in a new interface, in a new type of service, even in a new type of hardware. And you better believe that everybody is going to be paying attention to that, because a year from now, 2 years from now, another 5 years from now, it could be relevant as opposed to just an interesting demo. And the other thing is that they keep improving all their core products. I mean, if they were to be able to I'm interested to see if they have any sort of response to iOS 8, because there's so many new opportunities that are presented. If they have the ability to reframe Google's services as not only things that you have to hit a web browser or a custom app to do, but something they could project inside and throughout the entire Apple experience. Yikes, that could be interesting. If they find a way to project Google Now into iOS so that it becomes as something close to as integral to the experience as it is on an Android phone, I think that Google Now is going to pick up a lot of fans in iOS.
Google will probably tomorrow show off some watches. You know, they've had this Android Wear platform designed for wearables, not just Google Glass, but watches too. And it seems pretty strong rumor that LG and or Motorola or both will announce and show watches there. It's not the first time we've seen watches. We've seen a lot of watches. I'm wearing a Gear 2. None of these watches have been very impressive. And Apple still has not announced a watch, but everybody in the world is telling me Apple will do a watch.
October, Leo.
Is that it? Yeah. Are we going to see it in October? Yeah. Is that pretty sure now? Two and a half inch screen?
And I suspect it'll be like, you know, whatever it is, I suspect that it will be the thing that hits reset on this market. I mean,
it has in the past. Apple's been able to do that in the past. They did it with tablets. They did it with the iPod.
And then everybody sees it and goes, "Oh,
right.
Let's do that." It's not a given, though.
It's not a given that you can do that.
I'm not sure, because I think that a watch is now such an idiosyncratic market at this stage. It's completely in flux. It's not like when they came out with the iPhone and all they had to do, excuse me, not that it was a simple thing to build the iPhone, but they had several examples of commercially successful phones to draw on as they come up with their own idea of how to do it. Tablets, pretty much the same thing. iPad was revolutionary, but was not necessarily first. And it's not as though hypermobile computing had been unseen before. Right now, the idea of a wearable device on your wrist is still something that nobody has demonstrated that they actually want. Nobody has built one of these things that has been successful. We've had things like the Pebble Steel that shows that if you believe in this concept, there's some good hardware out there and it can be made very, very practical. So I'm not saying that I'm not dismissing the idea that Apple's going to come out with something with a color touchscreen, or even that I'm not even dismissing that it's going to be a huge monster hit. I'm just saying that I'm just not in a position right now where I feel I can predict anything. I'll still be surprised if it looks like what we imagine a smartwatch is going to look like, because I still can't get my head around the idea of Apple designing something that will fit both a man's wrist and a woman's wrist. And I don't imagine that they'd be happy in doing something that they feel will only be purchasable by 49% of the market. But again, I'll go back to my buzzword. I don't know.
Yeah. I think it's more analogous to the iPod than the iPhone. This is a market where there isn't much out there that isn't super nerdy and geeky that regular people are using, which was sort of like the MP3 player market back then. And there was some stuff out there, but it wasn't super impressive, and nobody was saying, oh, there's a big thing here. And that's a much harder trick to pull off.
I think it was pretty clear with MP3 players, starting with the Diamond, Rio, and Samsung, and a bunch of other companies had MP3 players. The Nomad. That there was something there.
That was something we wanted,
and I don't know if you can quantify it that way yet. The tablets, it was something we wanted. We wanted tablets, but BlackBerry was my smartphone before the iPhone, the E71 from Nokia. It was clear these were categories that were begging to be birthed.
The iPhone was preceded by the BlackBerry, and the iPod was preceded by the Sony Discman.
Yeah.
So it's not. I don't believe they really busted a brand new market. They just made this thing.
That's my point. Is that their markets existed just as they do in the iWatch and in the smartwatch market, but I think the difference is in those early markets. They're really, you could see this is going to happen. It's just a question of getting it right, and I don't see that with these at all.
I've had it explained to me that, you know, with the phone and with the tablet, Apple could clearly see what sucked about those things, and they had very clear ideas about what they could do to improve them, because there was years, if not decade, of devices on the market before that. And smartwatches are just not that old. There hasn't been enough time for products to mature to the point where Apple absolutely knows what sucks and what they can do. So I think it is more analogous to a device where Apple's coming earlier on the market. Maybe Apple TV kind of early on the market. And it's also not a huge market. No one has sold 100 million smartphones yet. So it entirely is a different thing than when they put out the iPhone.
And that's a really important point. The most optimistic projections for an iWatch market, if you calculate it out, would be a tiny fraction of what the smartphone market is or what the iPhone market is.
Let me give you the rumor roundup. We should have a little CNN-style graphic. The iWatch rumor roundup. Boom, 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 boom.
Neat theme music.
The latest from Reuters saying Taiwan's Quanta Computer Incorporated, another one of them Chinese manufacturing people, will start mass production of Apple's first smartwatch next month. Rumor two. I mean, also, is that like ding? Rumor one. Ding! The watch will likely measure 2.5 inches diagonally. Ding! I don't know what this means, slightly rectangular. Is that rounded?
Yeah, that made me laugh, like, but it's a little bit just off from square, yeah.
The source, by the way, one source does not a summer make, added that the watch face will protrude slightly from the band, creating an arched shape.
Sounds like supply chain leakage.
Terrible idea. Yeah. It does sound like supply chain leakage, and that could be painful. And will feature a touch interface and wireless charging capabilities. Ding! And we've heard this before. Apple expected to ship 50 million units. That's probably based on the amount, the order size. Right. And that the display will come from LG, exclusive supplier of the screen. By the way, LG making a watch, which we expect to see tomorrow at Google I.O. Mm-hmm. And another person familiar with the matter and another source say October will be the release date. Yeah. Ding! Come on, Chad. You can help me out here. We got five. That's five new data. Oh, you just turned off the TriCaster. Did you crash the TriCaster? Is that what happened there?
Don't irk.
Apparently, I tried to do a transition that was too much.
Ding. Pull the tiger's tail, Leo. That's what happened.
I've tried every Galaxy Gear watch, the Gear Fit, the Gear 2, the Gear 1. I've tried I gave the Pebble away to Chad, who likes it.
Yeah, I like
mine
too.
Used to wear in yours.
Yeah, still.
Okay.
Still got it.
That's because these are the guys who used to wear Nano watches, iPod Nano watches. Yep.
No.
never.
No, that was a terrible idea.
You deny
idea.
That?
That was a terrible idea.
I've tried every band out there. Oh, you got your Pebble there, Mr. Rene.
That's a Nano watch.
That's what? The Nano watch?
That's the Nano watch, yeah.
I don't know that one. Oh, that's the Nano. The iPad
Nano.
Yeah,
the Nano and the Pebble.
So there's the difference in size right there. I'd rather have a big screen, frankly.
Yeah, the Pebble shows you the time when you look at it. The Nano, you got to, like, press a button
so
to
does
see
the gear.
What the time
you see
is.
That? Every time I turn it up. And it's got a watch face, which is kind of nice.
I just didn't want to feel left out.
What the hell's that? Is that a Casio?
That's my on-hand wrist PC that runs Palm OS.
Okay, there you go. There's a
because I have a Galaxy Gear 2 and a Pebble, but they're both upstairs on my nightstand charging. So I just didn't want to feel left out.
And then I've tried the Fuel Band, the Fitbit, the Nike. Jawbone Up. So look, this has been a crowded space, all of which have flopped. Now I have to say, I'm looking at Motorola's official teaser for the Moto 360, and the one thing I find interesting about this, and I do hope they give us one at Google, us, I say us, and I'm not going to be there, but is it's round. It's got a round screen.
I've heard a lot of people really angry about this teaser in the industry because a lot of people believe that there is no technology that exists today to make a watch.
It's a lie.
To have a watch that big that can do that much that is on for any length of time, it just seems beyond the constraints of technology. So this video is not only setting up Motorola for disappointment, but it's going to create false expectations in a lot of people for what a watch could do.
Is it disinformation? Is Motorola trying to screw with Apple on this?
It's still frames. I mean,
this is not real, obviously, although there is a video... There's a Google video showing Android Wear in which somebody is talking to what looks like a Moto 360.
Yeah.
It is awfully thick. Look at the size.
At this point, they're trying to sell platform, not hardware. And that's really the difference. And Google actually has demonstrated that with Google Now and with their card design, they've got a lot of stuff that's already in play that if you can really instantly see it transferred onto a not a round watch face, but if they could make a square panel kind of like the Pebble, even if a little bit bigger, and if all it did was display Google Now cards, and if it had simply a microphone so that you could Dick Tracy style give it commands and get information back from it, that would be a pretty cool product. It might even be a product that would be worth $200 to $250. So it's less of a mystery, I think, with Google's mobility ideas than Apple's right
now. This is the Gear 2. I'm going to review it before you buy. Later in the day, but this is the second variation from Samsung. Camera's now built in instead of being a little pimple on the band. I can give the camera voice commands. In fact, I'll show images from a zip lining thing I did. I did it just so I could try this watch. And you can say record video, you can say take a photo, and it will do it.
Makes it much easier to stalk women on ski slopes without looking like a creep.
It's actually good on a zip line because you're going like this. Yeah! Take a photo. And then, it has a fitness app. It has apps itself. It has a UI. It's kind of like an iPod Nano in the UI. This is Tizen. This is not Google's Android Wear. Given all of that, all the functionality you could ever want, you could talk to it. It could talk to you. It does health It's still a non-starter, and it's $300, and it feels to me like a non-starter.
Who is going to buy these, I think, is the big question. And the biggest question is anybody who doesn't strap something on their wrist every day today going to start because these things will be so compelling that they'll want to do it? And if the answer is no, it's never going to be a big market, or it's going to be a big market for the over – somebody in the chat room was saying for the over 50 crowd, over 40 crowd.
People who wear wristwatches.
Yeah.
Think about the reason why those people stop wearing wristwatches, because they shunted all of that functionality onto their phone. So if you stop trying to sell them a watch that has digital features and you start trying to sell them, well, here's a smaller version of your phone and it's wearable – that's a way in.
Yeah, but and this happened before, right? Pocket watches got displaced by wrist watches because they were more convenient. It could happen again, but it is safe to be skeptical.
I'm going to extend this now because I think it's all wearables. I think we haven't solved the wearable conundrum, and I don't know if Apple is going to be able to solve it. I think this is understandable for companies need to think of what the next big thing is. They can't sit on their rest on their laurels.
When you look at what Apple's doing with health apps and APIs in iOS 8, I think what we're seeing is a hint that, which I think is smart, and Google's doing this too, that this is not the wearables thing is not a one product thing.
That's why I really include objects all over your body, right? I say wearables.
Because it may be something on your shoe or in your shoe and something on your belt and something on your wrist and something on your glasses or in your smart hat. I'm just throwing it out
there.
Which
Jason has always been a proponent of.
Smart hats, get on it. And that they'll all work together, and that what you'll be doing is based on maybe your personal style.
I would love it
if integrated into your clothes.
If Apple in October says it's not a watch, it's a hat. Angela Arendt says it's Burberry plaid.
Yep.
It's a hat. We're going to make men wear hats again.
Yeah. I mean, why not? Well,
there's no single piece of clothing that everybody wears all the time. I mean, you can't make one thing to suit everybody.
Well, that's why Android Wear makes sense, because Google's not saying we're going to make a watch platform. They're saying we're making a wearable platform. Yeah. We started with glass, but it could be a watch. They're going to show watches. I don't know if
the advantage of the watch is just that you can
Apple's
see
not
it
making
fast.
A watch. What are they
they're
making?
They're making iOS also, wearable.
Wearable. So you think they'll focus on wearable.
Well, I mean, the idea is that previously the wearable stuff that Apple made were iPods that ran, I forget what it was called, Pika, whatever it was, OS. And those were not connected to iCloud. They were not connected to anything else that Apple made. They were still tethered. They are still to this day tethered to iTunes over a USB cable. And Apple needs to get iOS onto things as small as iPods and because that's where that's going.
I just think that if I were going to make any wagers, I'm still more focused on them. They're making something more like a health band than a watch. And one of the difficulties I have is, how much money is somebody willing to put on their wrist on something that's right. unproven? I mean, I almost think that one of the most successful products Apple could make in this space is if the first thing they put on that whiteboard is $99. I don't care what you do, but it cannot cost one penny more than $99. And we'll make it as good as we can possibly make it. We'll make it as useful as we possibly make it. And we will also remember that this is not the only one of things we will ever make, but we want the first one we make to be $99. Yeah, people can get them.
Jobs did that with the Mac, and of course it didn't come in at the price that right. he said it should come in at.
See, they've usually gone high and then brought it down over time.
See, yeah. for me, the reason you put something on your wrist is because it's glanceable. And the reason that I still have the Pebble and use it is because I like push notifications coming to my wrist where I can see whether I want to get the phone out and interact or if I just want to glance and see what's going on and then go back to what I'm doing. And if you look at what Apple announced with iOS 8 with these mm-hmm. Today view widgets that developers can write, the idea that you could have a glanceable thing sitting on your wrist that could tell you what's going on in the world, what your favorite sports score is right now, what that mm-hmm. push notification is, a quick response saying I'll be right there, but nothing in great detail, just some basic sort of glancing and tapping. That might be a thing, but that's why you park something on somebody's wrist is because your arms are flailing around and you can quick
you can quick type
and
look at it.
Jerry Pournelle nailed this on Sunday, and I want to know what you guys think that he in 10 years this will all come to fruition. It will be a subcutaneous wrist tattoo, roughly the size of an iPhone, that'll glow through your skin. You'll be able to see everything
you
want.
How much time you have left on this earth?
That sounds familiar.
Is there a built-in blast?
Is this Logan's Run? I think that's what I want. I don't want a big honking thing strapped to my wrist.
I don't want surgery for my technology. That's all. That's
a tattoo. It's not surgery. They can tattoo it. It's a nano particle.
But I mean, I agree completely with what Jason's talking about because I've been trying to get in as many smart wearables as I possibly can. And one of the most interesting things that I've gotten in is this Casio watch that doesn't cost a whole lot of money and doesn't do a whole lot. The big selling point is it does have a matrix display in the corner of the watch that can receive notifications from the phone. But for all that, it is relatively affordable. It is a G-Shock style watch, so I'm not going to worry about it getting wet. I'm not going to worry about it dropping it on the floor. And it does deliver the one thing that would get me to really, really want to buy money and have this on my wrist every single day. And it will also be a low power device. I mean, there's so many difficulties with the $250, $300 color multi-touch display on the wrist, including you won't be able to see it, but there's scratches on every watch that I own. And it's always right about here. Right. And that's because I am exactly average height for an American male, and because God hates average height American males, all metal doorknobs are exactly the same height as the watch face. And at least once a month, I'll just hear a click, like "Ah, damn it!"
Clonk.
And I've just done that. And the first time that I'm sure that within the first month of having this watch, I'm gonna like be saying, "Oh, damn it!" at least three times, wondering if I'd finally broke this damn thing. So I'm wondering if Apple is capable of doing something smart but simple. And if Pebble is actually a company that is better poised to do great things because all they want to do is sell a lot of watches as opposed to conquer the market or define a space or prove that they're better than they're as good as the previous CEO was.
Here's how much time you have left, Andy.
There you go.
I think until we come up with a form factor that is comfortable, flexible, I just don't think we're there. I think we're so far off that even the magical, mysterious Johnny Ive, the Wizard of Ive, I don't think he's going to be able to solve this.
No, the first Apple wearable is going to be, even if it sells okay, it's not going to be the ultimate.
It's not the end.
Right? I mean,
it
would be silly to write off the category because the first one is too big and unwieldy and thick because it will be bigger and thicker than people want it to be.
Speaking of Mark Gurman, he says Kobe Bryant's wearing whatever it is. He says Apple has enlisted pro athletes to test the fitness capabilities of whatever this next thing
Or a fake whatever it is that's wrapped in
Yeah, I don't think that's it, yeah. Obviously.
Basketball and Apple collide. It's Mark's dream.
They say the Kings right winger Dustin Brown, a player from the Red Sox, also on the project. Of course, they're NDA'd. Bryant was spotted at the Apple campus last month meeting with Johnny Ive. That's true. Hard to miss Kobe Bryant. He's like 18 feet tall, mm-hmm. So, you know.
It's interesting. Well, it's interesting. Remember how Beats headphones got banned from the World Cup? Because if you want to make a popular brand, you give freebies to high-priced athletes that are going to be on television for two weeks.
So. They were banned?
Yeah.
They weren't necessarily banned. It's just that Sony is the key sponsor for World Cup. And because they basically said that you can't be wearing Beats headphones because they're
Apple
not sponsored.
Apple had the same problem at the Olympics because Samsung had owned the Olympics. That's so sad.
It's marketing, Leo. What people see is what they're familiar with is what they look for when they buy.
I'd like you all to start wearing your Basis watch because we've made a deal. No, we haven't. Actually, the Basis was interesting. I've tried them all that crap. Yeah. Yet to be wowed. Let's take a break. We're going to talk about the iPhone because there's also rumors about that. T-Mobile made some interesting announcements, and I do want to get your take on the Fire Phone. But first, let's tell you where to take that old stuff. When you're done with it, it's Gazelle. Gazelle will give you money for your old gadgets, your old iPhones, your old iPods, your Nano watches, your Apple computers, even your Samsung or your Surface tablet they'll give you cash for. Visit gazelle.com. Now, here's the deal. Now's the time. Because even if you don't know what the next big thing is, you can go and get that 30-day quote and be ready for the next big thing. Still got an iPhone 5? Want to upgrade to the 5S? Let's get an offer. In good condition, $220, that pays the fee right there. And if you unlock it, they'll give you an additional $40. They even show you how to unlock it. I think Gazelle is pretty amazing. But the key message here is you're not locked in. You're going to get that quote, and they're locked in for 30 days. You have the advantage here. You've got 30 days to decide. You might as well just go through your whole used in a gadget drawer, get rid of everything, get the price, and then check out when you're ready to sell, and they'll send you a box with a prepaid postage on it so you don't have to pay postage. They'll even buy broken iPads and iPhones, and they'll turn it around fast. If you accidentally forget to wipe the data or you can't figure out how on your broken iPhone, don't worry. They'll do that for you. Gazelle's very trustworthy. They've paid out now more than $100 million to over 700,000 customers, and they are just the greatest. Free shipping, fast processing. Try it today, gazelle.com. Look at that. Good deal on your old iPad. Let's get rid of that. What is that you sold?
This was an iPad non-retina display.
Way back when.
Yeah.
Even that's worth $155. Gazelle, gazelle.com. So what do you think of the Fire Phone? I think there's a couple of interesting things in Amazon's phone. It's really a Me Too phone spec-wise, but they've put in some features. The Mayday feature, I think, is a great idea. They've done very well with the Kindle Fire HD and HDX. You press a button within 15 seconds, a rep answers and can help you. Could actually control the screen. Now, admittedly, anybody who's ever used a smartphone probably won't use that, but it might be a great come-on for people who've never used a smartphone before.
But they're not the ones buying an Amazon phone.
Well, that's what's interesting. I don't know. People like
Especially
Mayday
not a
on
premium
the,
priced one.
Yeah, maybe. It really is aimed at the iPhone and the high-end Android.
This is my question, and I've talked to a bunch of industry analysts, and everyone's answer is similar, but still, it's still confusing me. I know why Apple made a phone. I know why Google made a phone. I have no idea why Amazon short-term made this phone, because it's not. There's no customer reason, at least. I understand Amazon might want a window. Like, this might be the new display window for stores. This might be a way for them to get even more money out of the whales that support the Prime system. But there's nothing in this phone that I think there's no way I would ever recommend this phone to anybody, and I've struggled for the last week to figure out an answer to that. The Firefly button is completely self-serving. Mayday is a feature that sounds great, but probably doesn't apply to the people who actually would seek out and use this phone. It seems like a hot mess to me, and I'm really disappointed because I think Amazon is one of the few companies, you know, maybe Facebook, who hasn't made a phone yet who could have done something like a Palm Pre or like an Android.
Well, I compare the first version of this phone to the first version of the Kindle Fire. where the fire had had a lot of potential, but it wasn't something you recommend to people. And then just two generations later, I do think that it's completely competitive with the iPad. And this doesn't do everything the iPad does, but it does a lot of things better than the iPad, if that's the sort of stuff you're using with. And I do see, I like the choices that they made in this thing. Firefly isn't necessarily completely self-serving, because you can be in Best Buy trying to choose between two coffee pots, determined to buy that coffee pot right then and there. And now you can simply press a button and get access to all the Amazon reviews of those devices. It's extensible by developers. So the idea of having a button on the phone that is always your one-click answer to the question of, I want more information about this one thing I'm looking at, be it a state flag, be it a phone number, be it a piece of art, be it anything, that's interesting. The idea that they're integrating gesture controls into just the core level of the operating system and the interface, that's interesting too, because I've always thought that it's not like it's not that I'm wearing out my thumb scrolling things down or tapping at something to get more information about something. But if there were a universal gesture and that worked in almost every app that said scroll down, or get me more information about what I'm looking at, I'd certainly use it. And the final thing is, I love the idea of having 3D cameras on a mobile device and allowing developers to play with that. I mean, just like the there are a million flashlight apps that came out as soon as you had a phone that had a big, powerful LED on it. I think there are going to be a million different 3D capture apps for this phone when it comes out. And when you start thinking about how the presence of a good camera on you at all times changed the way we think about photography, potentially that could be a big change in how we think about 3D capture and how we read the world around us. I agree with Renee that I'm not sure that I would recommend the Fire Phone to anybody in 2014, but I'm going to be definitely taking a look at it in 2015. And by 2016, if developers support all these unique features they put into the hardware, it could be something pretty cool.
I don't know. I love Amazon. I'm a Prime subscriber. I really like my sort of Apple stuff and my Amazon stuff working together. I prefer to use Amazon's, read Amazon's books and stuff
you
like
hate
that.
It when
but
mommy
also,
and daddy fight.
I hate it. I have to say, I am not super impressed with Amazon's software user interface stuff. There are little carousels and things like that. I'm skeptical about the phone being kind of a UI mess. Josh Topolsky from The Verge tweeted during the event, this is a hot mess of an interface. And from all the images I've seen, I would agree with that. So I'm skeptical, but you're right. The first Kindle was terrible. The first Kindle Fire was not very good, and they got it right over time, and maybe they'll do the same here. So I think it's interesting, but it seems much less compelling, to Renee's point, a device than the Kindle Fire was as a tablet, because this is, I don't know, do I need a phone from Amazon? And Amazon's going to be on my phone anyway, so I don't know. I'm skeptical. I do like the fact that it gives you a year of Prime for free, because that actually does – the people who are going to buy this phone, that actually has value to them.
That's $100.
That is a $100 discount, yeah.
But the thing is, like, if you read the fine print, it says, for example, if you take that phone out of the U.S., you no longer get Amazon Video. That phone is a non-starter outside the U.S. And even the Kindle Fire 3, which is better than the 2, which is better than the 1, it doesn't sell. I mean, that thing fell off a cliff.
The good news is we won't be seeing Amazon advertising it at the World Cup. Let's put it that way.
Yes.
And by the way, Fire TV, very similar. We don't know. Amazon's a black box in terms of sales figures, so we don't know. But
a great chart with no numbers on it.
Yeah, I think Fire TV, I think the phone, these are all kind of incremental products. And that actually raises a question. Dallas in our chat room said, going back to the iWatch, is it how important of a product is it for Apple? Is it a make or break product?
No,
it's a hobby.
The iPhone is the make or break product.
It's a hobby. Yeah.
Perceptively, though, it's important.
It's going to get a lot of attention.
It's going to be an important product no matter what they do with it, simply by virtue of the fact that Apple is entering this market. However, we can't ignore the fact that Apple, even they're not as consistent as Amazon in the terms of making one thing that's not very good but then improving it as they go. But we tend to forget that things rarely sprout out of Apple's forehead fully formed. The MacBook Air needed time. The iPhone needed time. The iPad needed a little bit of time. I think it's going to be hot to begin with, and people who are early believers are going to be very, very happy with whatever Apple makes. But it's going to take a couple of years for it to really get to where almost anybody would say that they have really defined a category with it. At least that's what I thought.
What I meant was the media. Like Apple already, the iWatch is not even out, and they're saying Apple's playing catch up with Samsung and other companies, which is a daft statement. But it's what they're going to be held to. regardless. The markets and the media.
They got enough money. That's not they're not like HP, where if they get bad press tailing off an early release, they got to back off of it right away, or else people get fired. I think that we need to come up with a new way of dismissing people who are saying silly things that nonetheless they believe in, because they will be proven out in time, and
you just take their keyboards away.
Yeah,
I wish we had. Here's another thing, Chad. We should add a mothership cam. I think we just need to find a cam somewhere in Cupertino that just can watch the construction of the mothership.
I feel as though this is one part of the earth that is not going to go away, that's not going to be hurting for time lapse pictures of the project. I think that there are people who are just basically creating solar drones that can just stay hovering in one place so that their site can have the time lapse from an angle that no one else has.
I really, because they've broken ground. And they're presuming
around Mario. And now it looks like a really cool rally cross ring.
Yes, you want Mario Kart
There have to have been somebody at Apple that said, "I know that I just have to have you tell me no. I have to ask. Can we have one day when no one's there, and we'll just do one day of rally cross, so we can say we did it."
Yeah, we did that in our basement before we loaded it up with crap. I had my little three-wheeled trike bike down there, I was doing figure eights, loop-de-loops. It was great. It's huge. It's 9,000 square feet. Well, I don't know what this is what we need. We need a camera from this perspective, and then we can have the official mothership
solar drone.
Cam.
That's the way to do it.
Can you put the DJI drone up there and just have it hover? No,
Alex
forever.
Can do it. Alex
15
can
minutes
do it.
At a time. Oh well. Come on, I want a picture. I want to see the campus grow.
Alex Lindsay could solve this, Leo. He could do it.
If only Alex could just put his mind to this. Looks pretty cool. I want to drive in this tunnel. You know what? You know, Woody Allen will make the next Sleeper 2 here.
Next THX 1138.
There you go.
Bay Area Institution, the
yes,
sequel.
The George Lucas of the 21st century is going to come here and say, "I want to build a movie around this." It's going to be pretty. You'll get an invitation, Jason, for the
opening. Oh, I hope so. That'll be great.
One thing I know.
They'll send me to the wrong place and say, sucker.
Seem to be a lot of place. Greyhound bus logos for the new Apple campus.
I really, when is this going to be finished? It's not for like years.
Yeah.
2016, did they say?
Really? That soon? That's only a couple of years.
I remember seeing something in the teens.
Yes, I think you're right.
16, 18,
something in the teens 19, is exactly right.
20.
Our show brought to you today by LegalZoom.com. If you are an entrepreneur, so what does that mean in French? Entrepreneur. Enter the penal colony.
There is no word in French for entrepreneur. Isn't that the famous George Bush saying?
There are no French entrepreneurs. Loic is the only French entrepreneur. If you're an entrepreneur, of course, you know, the dream is there to start your own business. I had it. And I did in 2005. And the thing that made it possible for me, I couldn't afford a law firm, but I knew that Kevin Rose told me I needed to incorporate. I needed to trademark my logo and my name. And I went to LegalZoom.com. And boy, what a deal. $99. That's the starting price for an LLC or a Chapter S or C corporation. $99. There it is. That's such a good deal. And we're still, by the way, operating on that operating agreement that we got. LegalZoom's not a law firm. This is the beauty part. You just walk through a questionnaire. They guide you through it's self-help services. They guide you through the process. Then you file and you're done. They provide everything you need. Register your trademark to protect your products and services. Incorporate to protect you. LegalZoom has helped over 1 million businesses get started right. Just got an A+ from the Better Business Bureau, rightly so. LegalZoom also provides legal help through independent attorneys. In their LegalZoom legal plan, fixed rates. You can read the attorney's profile and unedited reviews to get an idea of which attorney's right for you. The self-help services, the independent attorneys, this is what you need. LegalZoom.com, not a law firm, better. Visit LegalZoom.com. And when you use the offer code MBW to save on your legal needs and get access to a network of legal plan attorneys for guidance, we'll give you $10 off at checkout. LegalZoom.com, use the offer code MBW for Mac Break Weekly. There's a new iMac in town.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, baby, the cheap 21.
Technically.
21 and a half inch iMac. Actually, really, it's a new price. Although there's some things you should know about. For instance, you can't, the memory is soldered on this $1,099 iMac. It's dual core i5. It's got an HD 5000 graphics. That's the Intel graphics, built-in graphics.
And a hard drive, not even a Fusion drive, not an SSD.
Not a speedy drive, just a regular spinning 500 gig hard drive. But the big one is unupgradable memory. The memory, what you see is what you get. But it's affordable. In fact, Best Buy, I think, is offering it with a student discount or educational discount for down below $900. $850, I think.
So here's the thing. We Macworld tested this and gave it a really middling review. And
well, it's a middling performer.
The key question in the review from Jim Galbraith is a 15% lower price worth 50% lower performance?
That much slower.
It's slow.
Yeah.
And honestly, you might be better off if you if your budget is tight enough that you can't go up that extra $200, you might want to look for a refurb. Of an or an older model that you can buy used, because they will be faster than this super slow Mac that seems to be destined for education. But it's like a bad deal. I mean, unless you literally...
Well, do you need the speed, though? I mean, isn't that fast enough?
Well, it...
I mean, I it's the same screen. It's
not like I made this argument on Twitter, and I had a lot of people yell at me, because not everybody needs four cores, right? Not everybody needs that. The storage is slow. I wish it was a
Fusion drive. Is it a 5,400 RPM drive? Is it a slower drive?
It's. I mean, it really works at the point where it's a spinning drive. It doesn't have any SSD on it.
That makes a difference.
I think today, lots of people could use this, and it would be fine. I think the concern would be that it's not going to age as well as that system that's twice as fast.
Remember, it's designed to compete against $400 and $500 PCs that are equally slower.
Right, but it's $1099. It's not like it's $999 or $899. It's $1099.
It's $1099.
It's just it's a bigger performance gap for price than we've seen from Apple for quite a while.
And not buyer upgradable. Beware, really.
And it's soldered on. It's basically a MacBook Air inside there.
Yeah.
Except with a spinning hard drive instead of the speedy SSD.
And frankly, for education, maybe they don't. They want desktops like in a lab.
Why punish the kids, Leo?
Yeah, hey kids, here's a...
I don't think the kids can tell. Really? Can you tell?
My question, when I saw the performance, what made me really wonder is if they're really trying to make a budget Mac for education, why not target the Mac Mini? Or does this indicate that maybe when we see the next rev of Mac Mini, we will see a $499 Mac Mini? Because if you really want to get to get more Macs on more desktops, they probably already have a monitor out there, or they're probably willing to settle for a cheap $250 Dell monitor, or they probably got keyboards, they probably got everything they need except for that which makes them Macs. So I was a little bit confused by it. I read the release. I read the specs. I thought this doesn't seem like a very interesting computer. But I bet that once people start reviewing it and tearing it down, I'll see. Oh no, it really isn't very good. So I was very confused.
Yeah,
by this.
Schools like iMacs because they are all in one, and that's good. Yeah. And a Mac Mini with a monitor. You got people pulling the plug.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And the schools really like iMacs. I mean, they like laptops too. But
laptops for the students for a one-to-one program, but I think for a lab.
But in a lab, it's iMacs. My daughter's school is absolutely, it's all iMacs.
That actually makes sense. And I think it's appropriate to do the caveat, to say, look, understand what you're getting for this price. But I think that this
We are tech nerds, right? And so we're going to turn our noses up at this.
We're not the market for it.
Yeah.
And I think that this is the right device for a lot of people, including schools, but
if I were advising somebody who had a very tight budget and wanted to buy an iMac, I would say look at the refurbished iMacs because they're for the same price you can get something that's twice as fast.
But you can only get one, and the school needs to buy 20.
But the school can't do that.
Yeah,
right.
Do we know if education pricing is even cheaper on this?
It is
$50 cheaper, I think. It's not a lot cheaper, but it is cheaper.
I saw a Best Buy price. Let me just see.
But this is the education iMac too. Yeah. This is where it is doing double duty.
EIMac.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like the old EMAC.
EIMac.
So yeah, this is the great conundrum is $200 gets you a much better system, but what if that $200 is money for speed you don't need? It probably expands the lifespan to have a faster system, right? This will be able to run this will be crappier in 3 years than the one that's $200 more.
It's faster than a Chromebook. It's faster than a Raspberry Pi. It's faster
Will it run OS 10 Big Sur? That's the question.
Faster than
Big
a watch?
Sur. Yeah. Faster than a watch.
Faster than the TI-99?
Faster than, I don't know.
But yeah, you buy six, you get one for free. So that's a feature too.
That would be good. Let's do that. So another rumor, more rumors on the iPhone. I think at this point, can we lock it down? There will be two iPhones, mm-hmm. probably September. Mm-hmm. 4.7-inch display on one, 5.5-inch on another. Yep. I don't see, is Apple really going to do a 5.5-inch iPhone? Boy, yep. That's a departure for them.
That's a new Apple. Jump. It's a new Apple.
It is until it isn't.
Yeah. I mean, you talk about not just the sources of rumors, but the velocity of them and the directions they come from. And although I would not have predicted even 4 months ago that Apple would have gone with two different larger screen iPhones, now I'm really starting to believe that there's going to be a normal sized phone that's larger than an iPhone, and also one that's kind of like a Pop-Tart. And I would never have guessed that. That is the one indication
it's
of
kind of like a Pop-Tart.
The frosting on the Pop-Tart
is the
sapphire.
That's the only way to put it. And the great thing is, like, it means that I occasionally have to go down to the store, buy some chocolate Pop-Tarts, make mm-hmm. the comparison. It
doesn't taste as good. I'm willing to bet.
It was the first thing I noticed with the Nokia 1520 because it looked very, very familiar. So I bought a box of Pop-Tarts. It is exactly the size of 1 1/2 Pop-Tarts. You put 1 1/2 Pop-Tarts on top of it, you completely cover the footprint.
So you've blown the ratio, though.
That can't be.
You can't. That's a long Pop-Tart. Nobody wants that.
Just, do you have an iPhone on you?
Oh, who doesn't want more Pop-Tarts?
So let's do the comparison, because this is not exact an exact comparison, because this is an iPhone 5S. Do you have the over-the-shoulder? That's the 4-inch screen. This is a HTC M8. That's a 5-inch screen, so it's bigger than the 4.7 will be. I don't have my Moto X.
It's in the middle.
It's in the middle. And this is a Galaxy Note 3. This is 5.7 inches. This is fairly close to what an iPhone 6 might look like. That's a jump of a jump.
It's like a
the biggest
iPad.
Question for me there is that the Note size, the phablets have not sold in North America in any appreciable number. They've sold like gangbusters in Asia, but they sold for at a rather low price point.
Wait a minute,
and I don't think Apple's going to do low.
Give me that again, because then this is a Pop-Tart. And now, wait a minute, the Pop-Tarts.
I want to work there. If you've got Pop-Tarts,
Pop-Tarts on 4x3, though. Are you saying it'll be a...
No.
It'll be 16.9, won't it?
Yes.
What if you had two Pop-Tarts together? Would that be the 6-inch?
The iPad Mini.
That's kind of the iPad Mini.
And here's an Air. So there. Yeah. Oh, darn. Well, I guess I'm going to have to eat that one.
The Air is more a Sara Lee cake.
Would you like a Pop-Tart?
Sure, yeah. Okay. Hand it over.
Yeah, we do have Pop-Tarts. That's part of the employee benefit program we offer.
They have sugar, Coke, and Pop-Tarts, Andy. There's nothing wrong with that.
Not coming through.
What? I can't hear you. I've got a Pop-Tart in my ear.
You're holding it upside down, Jason.
You're holding it wrong.
The home button isn't working.
Exactly. They haven't solved that antenna problem on the Pop-Tart.
What the hell kind of flavor Pop-Tart is this? This has got sparkles on it.
Strawberry.
You need a bumper of icing before you can get calls on that.
Icing bumper.
This is not a healthful snack.
No, have you seen the calories in that thing?
This is not a healthful breakfast.
It's like as many calories as like a Big Mac, basically.
I don't know what I'm having for lunch.
Make sure you note that in your health app, Leo.
Wow. I'm not eating that.
We just got Pop-Tarts at the TV desk, too.
Everybody gets Pop-Tarts.
Jason, push one towards the TV. Push one towards the TV.
Who buys Pop-Tarts for the staff?
Sorry.
Is that Debbie? Is that Lisa's idea? Debbie?
Chomp.
I think we bought them like 6 months ago, and they've just been hanging around.
Well, that's a good thing about a Pop-Tart. They keep for a long time.
Last forever.
Yeah, though.
Anti-theft technology built into phones in New York, basically this, you know, kill switch, mm-hmm. Has reduced theft 15%? No, even more.
Yeah.
In San Francisco, iPhone robberies dropped 38% after the Apple put the lock feature in.
Activation.
In London, they fell 24%. New York City, robberies, which are, you know, like, give me your, you know, mm-hmm. threat of violence, 19%. Grand larcenies dropped 29%.
And the Samsung thefts went up.
They're easier to see.
Well, that's the word got
theft
out,
of Samsung products increased 51% at that same time.
So I'm waiting for the person to write the article showing that Apple is doomed because its thefts are down and Samsung's are up.
Samsung is more popular.
But this is the
muggers.
Power. Obviously,
that's the kill
thieves,
switch.
Thieves have learned that they can't sell stolen iPhones anymore because of the lock.
I would
activation
have.
Lock.
I am actually surprised because I usually think that thieves are pretty stupid and that they would be very slow to gather this. But I guess they found out. They stole a few, and they said, oh, wait a minute. These are these have no resale.
What do you mean you won't buy an iPhone? Well, bring me a Samsung. I'll buy those.
Because of Samsung. So if there were any doubt that the kill switch is something...
Totally works.
It works.
Yep.
Mm. Now, whether the government should mandate it is another question. I think probably it's just an evidence that Samsung should get on the bandwagon. In fact, they are talking about it. And I think the wireless carriers probably should do something about it.
Please copy that.
The idea, though, that the wireless carriers don't want a kill switch because they want people to buy more phones, I hope that's not true. That really imputes some sort of evil, morality in the head offices at Verizon and AT&T, which I doubt exists.
Incompetence to a large degree is indistinguishable from malice, Leo.
Well, maybe it's incompetence. Yep. But anyway, the kill switch is good. Activation lock is good. It works. Yeah. It works big time, significantly.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, both Google and Microsoft have both said that they're going to be adding kill switches to Windows Phone and Android. So
it's how it should be.
It just makes sense. By far, all of us here have probably that library of those questions that people ask us because they know there's a logical answer to this, but they think they just don't know what it is.
Right.
And one of the highlights of that list for me is, well, obviously if I just simply tell them what the serial number is, it's going to be impossible for anybody to use that phone. Or if anyone takes that to an Apple store or something, they're going to be able to and say, no, there is no way to do that.
Right.
They don't track serial numbers. They have no way of returning your phone to you. Even if someone says, hi, I found this on a park bench. This is the most logical place for me to return it in an Apple store. Can you please return this to its owner? Nope. Can't help you.
Well, and if you don't have an iPhone or if your iPhone is older and doesn't have activation lock, by all means, install. Every single phone platform has a kill switch software you can install on it. I'm looking at this M8, this Android phone, and it says when you have 10 chances to unlock it. After that, I'm going to erase myself. Is that the same as activation lock?
No, because that's just wiping the phone. They'll do that anyway. With modern iOS, they can resell it. The idea with the modern iOS device is you can wipe it. You can do whatever you want. It will need you to enter in an Apple ID and a password that was the one that was just on there before it will unlock. And otherwise, it's just a brick.
I noticed, by the way, maybe they're doing this on Yosemite, because I noticed that I needed to use an Apple ID to log into my Yosemite.
You don't need to, but it's an option.
It's encouraged. Microsoft does this with Windows 8.
Mm-hmm.
And that would have the same benefit, yeah?
Yep.
Well, maybe not.
It depends. I mean, I think that it's not as locked down a system, so people can probably just pull out the drive. But on the iOS devices, they can do it.
I think this is a great response. Good on Apple. And nobody, by the way, has... nobody else has that activation lock feature. That's unique to Apple. But it could be on every phone. To that extent, yeah. T-Mobile will lend you a 5S if you want to. Now, Verizon did this a while ago. They discontinued the program. But you can, starting June 23rd, which was yesterday, right? You can go to a T-Mobile store and say, I'd like to try an iPhone 5S for a week.
You get John Legere's personal iPhone. It's amazing.
Is it his?
No.
They're handing it around?
It's one of his effing iPhones.
What do you think of John Legere?
He's entertaining. I mean, I don't know how good a CEO he is, but boy, is he. Like, if you have not seen John Legere, you have not seen Shakespeare the way it's meant to be.
You have to go to T-Mobile's website to sign up. This test drive, they think, will be used by more than 1 million people in the first year. That's what they're expecting. So they've got quite a few iPhones in the back there. You'll get a week-long trial period with unlimited text, data, and calls. You have to stay in the U.S., obviously. If you damage the phone, $100, that's all. That's not bad. Costs more than that to fix a regular iPhone. And this is all free of charge. I think he's really knocking it out of the park with T-Mobile.
He wants to let people know T-Mobile has the iPhone, which has been a big challenge for them because they were the last carrier to get it. And this is a great way to do it.
This is, I think, a disincentive. You do the test drive, you have to give it back. Even if you're going to buy an iPhone, you're going to get a brand new iPhone and they're going to refurb that. Mm. So if you've spent time setting up that test drive iPhone, you're
iCloud,
you back up.
Back it up to the cloud, of course. What am I thinking? I'm a fool.
They also announced in that same event their free data for music streaming services.
Yeah.
Which
services? Rhapsody, Spotify
iTunes, Radio,
and iTunes. That is pretty cool.
Which some people thought was anti-net neutrality and some people thought was just free stuff, which was
funny. I castigated AT&T when they did the same thing. They have a program that really, but
I think if you play favorites, it's a bigger problem. If it's sort of like, well, our service is free, but everyone else's you have to pay for. Here, T-Mobile's saying all these popular services, not all of them, but it's a lot of them, are covered.
Pandora, iHeartRadio, iTunes Radio, Rhapsody, Spotify, Slacker. Those are the five.
And nobody likes freaking out about measuring data, you know, like bandwidth caps, right? Nobody likes being like, oh, I'd like to listen to that song, but man, it's going to stream and I'm kind of near my limit. So eliminating that, not for everything, but for your streaming music, is going to encourage people to stream more.
De-stresses the experience.
Yeah.
Also, if you're going to give something away for free, giving away music is pretty cheap. So,
right, it's not video.
It's almost nothing. It's not video. And also, I think studies say that you'd be surprised at how little it costs to stream Spotify and to stream all these other services, even over LTE. So it's not as though they're saying, here, have Netflix 24/7. But it's still a generous offer. Still, this it's why T-Mobile is a fun company to think about. Also keep in mind that they scheduled this event for the night of Amazon's big Amazon.
Yeah, wasn't that funny? Same event. Town too.
So that's you like that kind of gumption and moxie. That's spunk. That's spirit.
Does AT&T offer unlimited streaming for Beats? Because that they have that deal with Beats.
Mm-mm.
No,
not that I'm aware of.
Mm. No.
And wisely, they're not offering streaming for the Apple Podcast app, which is what costs me bandwidth every month.
Hey, speaking of Beats, when is that going to happen?
Which part of it?
Well, any part of it. I mean, it hasn't gone.
Dr. Dre is showing up at 4:30 in the morning to get there before Tim Cook.
In fact, Dr. Dre is in Hollywood producing an album, which is what he wants to do and always does. I don't know where Jimmy Iovine is, but I think he's taking some of that money and he's buying an island somewhere.
I think we will see a... So iTunes was extremely absent at WWDC.
No kidding.
And that leads me to believe that there is a shoe remake. To drop about music.
A remake. Yeah.
That may be a new iTunes. It may be a new music app. Who knows what it is? But I feel like this fall we'll see... That's a story they're not ready to tell yet, but that they will be able to tell. And I'm really hoping that it's like a music app and iTunes is dead.
And continuity for music.
And continuity for music, which we asked about because that seems logical that you'd be able to walk away from your Mac and your iPhone would just start playing the music where you left it off.
That's nice.
And when I talked to Apple about it at WWDC,
or your audiobook.
You know, in the sessions they said music was an example, and yet they didn't show anything about it. And I think that's because they're not ready to tell us what music's going to look like in the fall just yet. But I think there are changes happening there, and that would be the logical time to talk about Beats a little bit more too, because hopefully the Beats streaming service would be part of that story too.
We don't know, but are you guys assuming that September will be an iPhone and October will be an iPad? That usual.
The watch
and the watch will be in October, maybe
something like that. Yeah,
and then music would go with probably the October announcement. Yeah, or would they do it with iPhone?
Yeah, it's usually September. At least traditionally, it's been iPhone, iPod, iTunes, and then iPad, Mac in October.
Yeah,
although the watch kind of messes with things.
But I do think there's got to be something going on that they didn't really even show iTunes doing anything, and they didn't focus on it. I feel like there will either be a new approach to iTunes, or there will be, since they're taking they're doing this Photos app. We don't really know the ultimate disposition of iPhoto, but they're doing this new Photos app. It would be perfectly logical that there'd be a music app, just like there is on the on iOS
and
on
a home automation app. Maybe that HomeKit could be expanded to include your Apple TV. That's one rumor. It could be use your watch, your iPhone, your iPad. Apple TV. Go ahead.
I was going to say the iOS 8 is always two parts. The new iOS is always two parts. There's the first half they show off in June with WWDC, and then there's the second half they show off with the new hardware that has more specific services. So it would be no surprise to see several new iOS features that would tie into both maybe new music services and new hardware in September.
Well, Touch ID is an iOS 7 feature, but they didn't announce it until they announced the phone because it was pointless until they had a sensor.
Hey, I just had a horrifying thought. Uh-oh. This new iMac is not replacing the Mini. Is the Mini dead?
I don't think
No.
That rumor's been out there for a long time, and they sell pretty well, and I think their margins are pretty good, and people buy them. I have two in my house right now.
We've got a busy time for Apple coming up in the next few months. Yeah.
It's going to be even more insane than previous years, which were insane.
Yeah, this is what they do.
Yeah, just the final dog and pony show demo of iOS 8 and Yosemite together, the shipping versions and how they work together. That in itself could be a 45-minute keynote, and that's stuff that they've already shown us. So This is a profoundly exciting time.
Maybe we'll get like an invitation that looks like a college schedule or something that says, please come to Apple's campus every Tuesday at 10 a.m. for the next 8 weeks, and we will announce something.
Oh, man. Well, 8 a.m. on a Friday.
That. I would love that.
Oh, really? I was trying for the Tuesday, Thursday, 1 p.m., but instead I got Monday, Wednesday, Friday at 9 a.m.
I can't even find my locker, Jason.
A condo or something for the fall, because if I have to keep flying from Boston to San Francisco.
A good idea.
Every week.
An extended stay motel for you.
When I first started watching this video, I thought that ABC was going to announce they'd invented the teleportation device. But no, in fact, it's just a new Apple TV
channel.
Why is he looking over there? What's?
And unlike the apps on your iPhone, there are only about 50 apps.
Why is he looking over there?
It's a style.
There's more interesting people over there.
To shake things up and give the
they had two cameras on this shoot, and they will let you know that, Leo.
Yeah, right.
And they're not going to do any retakes. This is straight through. ABC News is now on Apple TV. What a surprise. ABC is owned by Disney, which is practically owned by Apple. I mean, I don't know what the relationship is there, but it's pretty
Lorene
tight.
Lorene Powell Jobs.
Yeah, Lorene Powell Jobs owns Disney, and so she is actually the biggest stockholder. The Jobs estate is the biggest stockholder in Disney. Yeah.
It's still like 6% or something.
Yeah. Hey, it's billions.
It's more than I got.
You will get live TV.
I take 1%.
Four separate live video streams, including, I guess, local news, right? Video news updates on the hour. 4 to 5 live reports per day.
Boy, they really need better channel management on the Apple TV interface.
It's getting a little out of control. You're going to... This is the ABC channel alone. 9 TV stations. WABC in New York, KABC Los Angeles, Chicago's WLS, PVI from Philadelphia, KGO from San Francisco, KTRK from Houston.
Do you need a cable subscription to use it, Lee, or is it open?
Ah, that's a good question. I guess not, because these are broadcast networks.
Good news for Matthew Panzerino of TechCrunch, KFSN in Fresno is on.
What the hell? And why? And why? Fresno.
I'm Matthew Panzerino.
Now, those are all owned and operated.
They're O&Os. But... That's right. That's what it is. KGO is, it's owned and operated by ABC. That's right. That's exactly what it is. And Milwaukee, WISN.
Milwaukee.
Curated stories and videos. 50 years of historical footage. From ABC News, including This Week in History and The Day in Pictures.
Bonnie Franklin on Battle of the Network Stars, all on your Apple TV.
That was a good show. I like Bonnie Franklin. Also, PBS Kids, AOL On, and Willow, a sports channel dedicated to international cricket. Finally, the cricket channel.
Finally,
Mad Mardigan.
And a Flickr channel has also been updated. So that update, did that go out? I think that goes out today.
Today, yeah.
Turn on your Apple TV. See
what you
got.
I have more channels to turn off.
Right. Hey, don't turn off Willow. Cricket is big. You like,
weird sports.
Weird sports?
Yeah, cricket is
Cricket's kind of, for those of us who are not in a Commonwealth nation, cricket's kind of impenetrable.
Yeah.
I'm in a Commonwealth nation and it's still impenetrable.
But can I get Premier League football on my Apple TV?
I think you can, but mostly that's through the NBC Sports Network, and I think they do have a channel. Everybody's got a channel on the Apple TV now.
ABC owns ESPN, but there is a separate ESPN
right.
channel.
Well, there's also the Watch ABC app, which is not the ABC News app, which is not the Watch ESPN app.
That's confusing.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Needs to get better.
Yeah.
All right. Let's take a break. When we come back, my friends, my boys, my guys, your picks of the week. But first, a word from our good friends at Shutterstock. They've got a brand new site called Offset. They noticed on Shutterstock, which has the greatest collection of royalty-free images anywhere, that there was a real demand for the editorial images that they offer at Shutterstock.com. These are images taken by some of the world's best editorial photographers and illustrators, people whose work is featured in Martha Stewart, Condé Nast Traveler, National Geographic. Gorgeous, authentic imagery. These are not staged shots. This is the real deal. And you can get it at Offset. In fact, if you go to offset.com/welcome/MacBreak and sign up for your free account, we'll get you a buy one, get one free deal on new accounts. That's a good deal. $250 for web quality, $500 for high resolution. And you may say, wow, $500. But let me tell you, you can print these, put them on the wall. You can use them in your magazine, in your iPad app. These are gorgeous stuff. These are very talented, like Andrea Gentle and Martin Hires, New York-based photography team. They met at Parsons. They've been working together since 1993, photographing still life, food, beauty, fashion, and travel. this is, I mean, editorial is very different from stock photos. These are real people doing real things. Just really nice stuff. I think this is a great idea. Shutterstock, they noticed that people were really interested in the high quality stuff. Now they're offering you buy one, get one free. By the way, illustrations, not just photos, but illustrations too. Go, you know, create a free account. You can browse through offset.com. And when you decide to buy, go to offset.com/welcome/MacBreak to get that 2-for-1 deal. Offset.com, brand new brand from Shutterstock. We love Shutterstock too. We thank them for their support. A MacBreak Weekly, Andy Iannocco. I was mentioning, I don't know, I think it didn't get into the show because it was during a reboot of the equipment, of the gear, that last week you mentioned this sous vide thing. That you just said you wanted your rich friends to buy a Mellow.
I want someone to buy one so that I can see how well it works and enjoy the food they cook with it.
It won't be out till the fall. But you remember I ordered one and I got a very nice email from the Mellow fellow. His name is Zay, saying, hey, I saw a big spike in orders for the Mellow, and I couldn't figure out where it came from until I looked through the logs and I realized it came from your, you know, MacBreak Weekly, and I watched it, and I was so happy to see you order it on the air, because I did order one. Now it won't be out till next year, yeah. But this is a sous vide cooker that looks pretty darn cool. So, Zay, hello. And cool. So thank you for that pick last week, even though it wasn't something you've bought.
Cost me $400 too.
Did you order one too?
Yep.
Awesome.
Awesome. Andy, open invitation anytime you want.
Most of the spike came from the Twitter.
It was just the hosts. I saw 3 sales. It was all of us. I think probably Alex Lindsay bought one too.
The Twit bump.
Yeah. Mellow. So what do you got for this? What can I buy this week?
Well, it's not something new. Adobe has been sort of dilly-dallying and dithering about whether or not to make one of their best Creative Cloud deals a permanent thing. For $10 a month, you get the photo package, which is instead of getting the entire Adobe Creative Cloud suite, if you can subscribe to the photography plan, which only includes Photoshop and Adobe Lightroom, and that was $10 a month, and was going to expire in March, and then they decided to extend the offer like another couple of months. But a few days ago, they announced that, okay, this is now going to be a permanent thing, $10 a month for Photoshop and Lightroom. And if you are at all interested in taking photography to even slightly a higher level, it's just so worth it, because Lightroom is a really great app just for organizing and some doing even complicated enhancements to your photos that involve just, you know, pushing the sliders aside, as opposed to having the stylus and saying, oh, I want a third head on this camera. I don't want just 2 heads on it. It really allows you to organize and turn a really good JPEG or RAW into a really a image as good as your camera is capable of generating. Photoshop, it's really intimidating for so many people, and it should be, because it's a professional grade image tool. But if you think of it as $10 a month for Lightroom, which is still less expensive over the year than it would cost in shrink wrap, and getting Photoshop for free, now the next time you rotate an image or you do a panorama and there are empty spots, instead of thinking about what do I do to those blank white spaces, you would just simply move it into Photoshop for 1 second, spend all of 10 seconds doing a smart fill where it will duplicate exactly what needs to duplicate to make those things happen. And you get this perfect image. All these things you can do with like 2 or 3 clicks that would be damn near impossible to do in any other app. There's the other. So I really think it's a good value. I didn't plug for Creative Suite until they made this $10 a month offer, because it just didn't make sense to me for $50 a month.
Yep.
But for 10, absolutely.
I was already a Lightroom user, and I thought, wow, actually that's a great deal, because I'm gonna get Photoshop. Yeah.
And because I was plodding along with like version 4, I think, and I really hadn't. I got the demos whenever I had to review them, but I didn't really stick into them. And boy, what a great improvement it is. The other advantage to that, though, is that Adobe is really making this subscription very valuable by adding all kinds of really cool services and mobile tools. They came out with the iOS version of Lightroom that allows you to do that kind of editing right on your tablet. It has its own RAW decoder. Yep. And then there's the third thing, which is speculative, I know, but I'm one of the many things I'm really hot about for iOS 8 is all the controls that Apple has given to developers in developing their own camera apps. Now, pretty much anything that the camera can adjust, you can now, a developer can adjust through their hardware.
This is not a camera app. This is Photoshop Mix I'm showing here. This is one of the new free apps for the iPad that I
It's very easy to delete the background off of something and merge apps together. And on an iPad Air, it is so quick and so slick.
It's fun.
But, I'm really keen to see what Adobe does if they decide to expand the iPhone version of their Lightroom app from just an app that will edit photos you've already taken and develop their own camera app. You know, make this an all-in-one solution that will say, you take the picture, Lightroom will allow you to adjust the brightness, the color, the contrast, or it could simply say, you know what, I know exactly what was wrong with that image. If you take the picture again, I can make sure the tone curve is adjusted properly, the exposure is proper, the white balance is proper. And I'm just excited by the potential of that. So I think there'll be a lot of additional benefits over the next year, but even just today, if you're at all disappointed with the pictures that you're $500, $800, $2,000 camera takes right out of the box, it's probably because you didn't do 5 minutes to 10 minutes worth of adjustments in Lightroom or Aperture with it. That's what really makes those images pop. That's what makes them sharp and crisp and the color's really nice. And because I have to admit that I prefer Aperture's methodology and interface, but Apple really needs to give us some sort of a sign that they're going to be improving this and coming out with updates to it, because it's been a couple of years and still kind of slow compared to Lightroom. And you just need some crumb in your basket to maintain the faith that this is not an abandoned product.
Give us a sign, any sign.
I thought $10 was good. The one thing, and YYZ is pointing this out in the chat room, and I experienced it too, that the new Photoshop that you install when you do this is 2014, does not uninstall or replace the old Photoshop. Mm-hmm. So all your plugins are left hanging on the old Photoshop. I just copied them over. I don't know if that's going to work or not yet, but that's a little annoying.
Yeah.
That's not the way to install it.
Just the amazing things you can do with Photoshop, where you come home from your vacation and you see this drunken Yahoo in the background of the kitten, the nice picture you took of your kids with the Eiffel Tower, that instead of having to spend 2 hours fixing this, it is literally lasso, smart fill, done.
Love it.
Love it. So beautiful.
Rene Ritchie, your pick of the week.
I was actually going to pick the Photoshop stuff if Andy hadn't, and then I saw on the sheet that he'd picked it already. So I rapidly went to my backup plan, which is I'm a complete sucker for the Lego games, from Lego Star Wars to Lego Batman to all of them. And the Lego Marvel one is now available for iOS as of last week. So if you enjoy, you know, the Avengers, the X-Men, the Fantastic Four, I stuck the video in the document as well. I've played most of these games on consoles with my godchildren because they're multiplayer and they're a lot of fun. But if you want something you can take with you, something you can have in a car, that's just, you know, it's fun entertainment. There's not a lot of cartoon violence, but there's no brutality. I just cannot recommend the Lego franchise high enough. It's terrific gameplay, fun for the entire family.
Jason Snell, do you have a tip, a recommendation?
I do. I was searching through the comprehensive Mac Break Weekly document, and at no point does the phrase launch bar seem to appear in there.
Well, we did recommend it, but you can recommend it again.
I
think, Renee, did you not recommend it at one
point? Well, you guys and you, Leo.
You guys updated your document at episode 400, so perhaps it's back there. Anyway,
we're not talking about the launch. Quick launch for the iOS thing.
No, that's Launch Center Pro. This is Launch
Bar. Way back when.
Yes, so version 6 just came out. It's $29 for a new thing. I cannot use a Mac without it.
Is this Corellia? Who does this?
This is Objective Development,
that's right.
Austria.
Yep.
And it is great. I cannot use a Mac without it. And it isn't just a quick launcher. Some people will say, oh, well, Spotlight in Yosemite will do all the things that these launchers will do. It's not true. It does incredible things, including launching files fast, picking what app a file opens in, doing math, rearranging text.
So this is a crowded category. You've got, of course, Quicksilver.
Yes.
You've got Alfred,
yes,
which is kind of the Quicksilver, and then Launch Bar, which is the oldie but goodie.
And,
of the three, you like Launch Bar the
I've
best?
Always loved Launch Bar. That is my favorite. It looks much better now. They did a huge interface upgrade to make it look a lot prettier. And it added a ridiculous assortment of new features, plus has extension support now, so people can add on third-party extensions. But it's
version 6.
You can try it out for free, and I really recommend it as a productivity utility. I use it all the time. That's how I do almost everything on my Mac is via Launch Bar.
I have a version 5 license, so I guess I can upgrade.
You can upgrade.
Yeah.
You can try the new one for
5, yeah. Good. I haven't seen Launch Bar in ages.
Yeah, so it's a quick launcher, and it has this idea of almost understanding sentences where you can pick a file and press tab and then type the app you want to open it in and press return, and then it opens.
$30 for a single license?
And it learns as you go. I found that one of the things that frustrates me about Spotlight is Spotlight wants a string that is found in the... Yeah. In the file that you're looking for, and of course, Launch Bar. If you type the first couple letters of the first words of the file, it finds it.
Right.
It learns as you go. It's great. Oh,
good. I'm sorry. I apologize. You're right. We haven't recommended this since 2009.
See, there you go. So here's a reminder: 5 years pass, and Launch Bar version 6.
It has been a little while. I found a kind of interesting little program. My hearing is not all it should be, and I was wondering how much have I lost as I have aged. And I found a little program, a hearing tester, that's free for the iPhone called Mimi. Now, there are other ones. I really like this one. I was doing it last night. And it is very similar to what the audiologist test. You'd want to use a good pair of headphones. They say you can use it with your Apple earbuds, but I think it'd be better to use a really high-quality pair of headphones. And it has a couple of nice features. Once you do the test, just like an audiologist, you have two buttons, left and right. It plays a variety of tones. As soon as you can hear the tone, you press the ear that you're hearing it in. Should I do it? Should I do a little test? We'd have to be quiet because it does see how noisy the environment is. Let's continue.
Shh, be very, very quiet.
Be very quiet. Now, let's see if you can hear this. You ready? Do you hear it yet? Tell me when you hear it. And which ear you hear it in? I heard it in the right ear. So it's just, have you ever done an audiology test? Is exactly what this is. And then it gives you a profile. This is the thing I found most interesting. If you show the screen, I don't have the profile on here. I had it on my iPad at home. But it'll show you what frequencies each ear is capable of, where there's a dip in frequencies. And then this is really cool. It'll show you if we fix these frequencies, it'll play back sounds that fix the frequencies and give you full sound. And it really shows you what you're missing, especially as you get older. It told me I was 61 years old. So it actually shows your hearing age. My hearing age is better than I thought because I am 57. I mean, that's only 4 years off. So find out what your hearing age is, hear what you're missing, and then if you're one of them youngsters that has good hearing, it can simulate what people like me are hearing. You can actually try different ages and see why I keep saying, stop mumbling.
Why you should fear the future.
It really is a nicely done app. It's absolutely free. It's called Mimi Hearing Test, and it's iPhone only, and my recommendation. Thank you, everybody. What a fun show this has been. Jason Snell, I appreciate you making the trip up
to
join us. Always love having you.
It's great being here.
What are you doing for Google I.O.?
We got lots of coverage on greenbot.com, which is our Android site, and pcworld.com, too.
Are you going?
I'm not going. I'm going to sit and watch it from afar.
You want to come back up here tomorrow and join me?
I think they're going to make me watch it from our offices this time.
Yeah. I am going to be all alone. We're going to cover it starting at 9 a.m. And literally everybody, Mike Elgin's going, Gina Trapani's going, Jeff Jarvis is going, Jason Howell is going. We have asked everybody in the studio. They're all going. I'm going to be all by myself. Have pity on me.
Let's talk.
Think about it. You could come up
9
here.
9 a.m.? All right.
9 a.m.
Will there be breakfast?
There'll be breakfast, Pop-Tarts, all the Pop-Tarts you can eat.
Oh, God. I've got a thing. I'm very busy.
But we will cover it live, and they're going to stream it live, so we can do that. And then we're going to do This Week in Google, and everybody who's there is going to come up here, and we're going to have a big party in the afternoon talking about what Google announced. Renee Ritchie, what are you doing tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. Pacific?
I get to watch it from afar too. I don't have to do it. We sent Phil Nickenson from Android Central there. Yeah. My job is done.
I think Andy made a good point. Even for Apple folks, this is an interesting keynote.
Absolutely.
There will be something good for you too. Thank you, Renee Ritchie, imore.com. You too have podcasts, the Debug Podcast. Last week, fabulous. Thank you for letting us know about that. Anything you want to plug coming up?
So it's a trilogy, and part two comes up tomorrow, where Nitin talks about the early days of Project Purple and the stress involved in actually launching the iPhone, which was fascinating to me.
Can't wait to hear it. imore.com/debug, the ongoing conversation with Renee Ritchie and Guy English And
it's amazing because it's one of the biggest historical events of the last decade.
Yeah.
And he's so generous in sharing, because you hear so many stories about it. He was actually in the room with very few other people when it happened. So.
Wow. Really neat. Look forward to that. You've got a few podcasts, Jason Snell, of your own. The Incomparable is fabulous.
Thank you. TheIncomparable.com. We've got like five podcasts now. It's a whole
amazing thing.
Really? For some reason,
six
felt like...
Six podcasts. Well, sort of five.
You're growing... Should I be worried?
No, well, not yet.
You're growing into...
It's all pop culture stuff.
Yeah.
Is what we're doing.
Okay.
But we've got a movie and a D&D and a TV.
Awesome.
And we have a new Star Trek podcast hosted by Scott McNulty, where he watches random episodes. You should be on that sometime. Random episodes of Star Trek. Chosen randomly.
It's called Random Trek.
Which is why there's so many Voyager episodes, because no one would choose to watch that many Voyager episodes.
Yeah.
Except Brianna.
What fun. TheIncomparable.com. And, of course, IDG, Mac World, PC World, all that stuff. Yeah, you know, the hot tech high. What was it? Rust? What is it? Blue?
Greenbot?
Greenbot. Rusty bot.
You think of the Android.
Green Android.
I got it.
It's a
Greenbot.
I got it. And thanks so much to you, Andy Inako. Inako's Almanac on the 5x5 network. And he reads his old columns there, too, which is a great idea. What's the name of that? Andy's old columns?
Old Tech News.
Old Tech News. And, of course, joins us each week for MacBreak.
It's not exactly, you know, one day old. It might be a week old or 2 weeks old. But it was professionally written by someone who probably got paid for it, or as soon as he files his invoices, got paid for it.
Old Tech News. Thank you, Andy. Thank you, Renee. Thank you, Jason. Thanks to all of you for joining us. We do MacBreak Weekly, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1800 UTC, every Tuesday on the Twit Network. You can watch live at live.twit.tv. Use those apps. We got lots of them. All of them support the live viewing. I think all of them do. You can even watch using Twitcast on your Chromecast or the Roku app on your Roku device. We look good on a big screen. And if you want to join us in studio, we'd love having you. Nice bunch here, including Scott Canaster, longtime Mac tech writer, now at Google. He's gone to the other side in the studio today. Tickets at twit.tv if you're interested. And, of course, we make on-demand audio and video available after the fact. We don't call it a podcast, but you could. We wouldn't stop you from doing that.
Yeah,
you can get it on iTunes or wherever you find those other things we call podcasts. Thanks for joining us. Now back to work, because you know what? Break time is over.